this person is providing referrals, personal introductions, but they don't participate in the mastermind group.
So what we anticipated that when we rotated and asked them to be the leader for 90 days,
right.
He hasn't managed to make himself do that.
Okay. So he doesn't feel comfortable with that just yet. So maybe, you know, you have to continue to lead, and when the other person is invited into the group and observes, maybe they're willing to take a leadership perspective. Sometimes they need to go through these agendas a few times to feel comfortable, and some people aren't comfortable taking the lead. And that's okay, because if they're not, then you have to take the lead. Okay.
Yeah, they said they were comfortable, but they just didn't do any action. So maybe that's one of those where we were supposed to jump back on saying, I did interact in the middle and say, hey, listen, not trying to step on your toes, but we haven't put together anything. Are you working on that?
And okay.
They did put that together. And then you
know, okay. So what percentage is your production down this year?
Mine? I'm down from 410 to 360. Pretty.
410 to 360.
And for me, Curtis, part of it is I did a swath of transactional business. And my feeling
right.
is when I'm kind of overwhelmed with contact.
Right.
And I don't have as much time for that. Part of it
right.
is my processes aren't tight. So having all these data points to do has been a struggle for me.
Okay.
And so what's been forsaken is my flex time where I came up with ideas and I called people and did ideas.
Okay. All right. So 410 down to 360. And Rodney, how about you?
Well, from last year, I'm down about 13%. 14%.
14% to what level?
My production looks like it's for this measurement period, it's like 302. That cut off on the 18th.
Okay.
So I think it's about 302,000.
302. Okay. What was your goal for this year?
400. Plus, I can't remember exactly.
Okay. So you wanted to add around 100,000. And what was your goal, Russ?
I put it in at 499.
Okay.
So you, know,
so you wanted to add close to 100, let's say.
Yes, all right. Sir.
So if we back that out and use the self-worth analysis that we put together, you know, it's gonna kind of tell you what your asset growth would have to be and your revenue per household in terms of penetration, and the number of new households that would need to be added in order to get there. Okay, so. Is it safe to say that you all, in terms of net household growth, what do you think your net household growth has been for this year?
I would think household growth, maybe a few, but then I know I lost two larger clients to debt.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I kept, I mean, net, I think it will eventually translate into more production because I'm keeping half the assets and it's going to be in productive asset, you know, production rather than
right.
sitting in stocks or bonds that I get nothing from.
Okay.
But that's yet to be completed. And I lost another client and all the assets went out. I mean, it's probably like...
Mm-hmm.
$3 million, and you know, it's I realize households are important, but I look more at probably assets under management per household.
Of course. Well, they're kind of obviously related.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
Curtis, I think so. We had 4 to 5, maybe it depends on how you interpret it. I was going to say we could be close to 7 or 8 joint households that we either added that were new or developed from Embers.
Okay.
That's the progress that I kind of think about, and we share those. And,
okay.
So like it's 7 or 8.
Okay. So would you say that was a net positive, or were your expectations, and what about the quality of the households? You know, the 7 or 8 that were added, were these households that had, you know, $250,000 or more, $500,000 or more, $750,000, or were they million-dollar households?
None of them were million-dollar households. All of them were between $250,000 and $750,000, let's say. And if that got overcounted, one of those still hasn't moved, now that I think about it, and that's $600,000.
Okay. There,
medical stuff in the way, but, you know, until they move, they're not in, so I overcounted on that one.
Okay. All right.
But, yeah, okay. 250 is represented, but there's like 4, 5, and 600 and 1, 700.
Okay.
I mean, over the last year, we've done 32,000 joint in that joint code.
Okay. All right.
I mean, there's some, when we're working together with existing people,
right,
the results seem to be pretty good.
Yeah, in our tagline, you've got the Carr family, you've got the people from yesterday. Now, those came from me, and we made them joint, but we are building pipeline of revenue. Those will eventually bear fruit.
Okay. Okay. So, if I'm hearing you correctly, and I don't know if you were finished, but continue to chime in, the structure part, in terms of team dynamics, is still a challenge. And really working the client acquisition areas in terms of responsibility, accountability, kind of staying on top of that, has been a bit of a challenge. Because when I look at, there's 7 methods of really growing clients, so client acquisition. You have to be using the enthusiastically endorsed model. You have to be providing the 90-day free look. And hopefully, because of the client experience that is being delivered, you might be getting a couple of unsolicited referrals. The centers of influence, a 4-member mastermind group, moving toward 1 or 2, 1 apiece in terms of community boards, and really narrowing your niche markets. And then, of course, having a social media impact and working the VIPSA referral method. So when you look at those client acquisition strategies, and I sent you all a matrix, you know, the idea is to get the practice sufficiently organized to free up face time with existing clients and being able to acquire new ones. And suffice it to say, we're making progress in all those areas, but there's still a ways to go. You have to be almost doggedly dog-minded in executing on those methods. And while you're doing that, you're trying to figure out your team dynamics and work together as a team. I would say that there's lots of potential for growth, but we've really got to keep the eye on the ball in terms of, you know, staying focused on those items. And it really takes a lot of organization, and you all share a administrative assistant at this point. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. All right. So we're still not at the point where, you know, you have your own assistant. You probably, is your firm wanting you to have $1 million in combined production before that happens?
They actually relayed a smaller number in some conversations. It was more 750 or 800 or something like that.
My mind said 850. So
850? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we're going to end up this year at about 700. So you really need to move toward going to about 850. If you did $850,000 in production, where does that place your team among other teams in your office?
Charles is hired, Jennifer's hired, who else is hired? Oh, Thor, they're the same, or maybe a bit.
Okay. They're right, yeah, we're about the same.
That was
number two.
Okay. That puts you by number two. Okay.
In all sincerity, the office backed us. We had a recent person leave, and
okay.
They allowed us to keep our assistant, who was more experienced than some of the ones that the other two teams that were above us would get. We kept the better
okay.
assistant. So I would say
okay. Good.
They could have taken
good.
Yeah.
So you're getting the support. Okay.
I feel like
so,
we just changed some leadership, so we'll see if that continues. I think if we don't show some growth, then you know
right.
that works.
Okay.
I view this as like we're just so slow to execute. Like we just did a pretty good client event. We had 25 people there. 15, 18 client and prospect groups, you know, so we haven't executed that before, and it's better to tie down and get some confidence that we could repeat. So, I mean, we're improving the team dynamics a lot. We just don't have revenue and assets really to show for it.
Okay.
But it's not that team, you know, it's like, whatever methods we're going to use to grow, and, you know, I think we know how to do the other things, but the constant pressure of, you know, figuring out this growth is pretty intense. But anyway, you know, we need to find that consistent method. You know, people, the successful advisors have those methods, and it's different, you know? I mean, I've known people that built their business knocking on doors, calling, you know, people, doing hunting trips, you know, BNI or BNI. You know, so we need to figure out our method, and I don't know. We have the bandwidth to do all of these. I mean, we can... Maybe it becomes more normal to do the board membership, the social media, the VISTA, you know, COI, all those. I just don't know that we can do that. I think we need to, I mean, ideally.
Well, I think you hone in on two or three kind of concepts, you know, and figure out the fit and the comfort level. And then you have to relentlessly pursue them. You know, and I want to let you finish here too. I'll just make this comment that the basics of everything is revenue per household. You know, the number of households that you have. Okay. So if you're getting $600 per household, and you don't have time, then you've got to start looking at households that can provide $1,500 to $2,500 in production, just to use, you know, kind of simple numbers. Whatever your baseline is now, you're going to have to crank that up. Respond, I was looking at some notes, and you said, well, your bigger clients wouldn't meet with you once a month. And if you've got a focused agenda, that means they're only going to hear your agenda four times per year. So you got to go back. This is all interrelated. It's, you know, are we getting the household penetration? Do we have the agendas with the ideas? And are we carving out specific time for client development, business development, through referral? Because your client experience now is probably got to be pretty good. People are getting scheduled. Let's talk for a moment about what your market focus is in terms of niche markets. Did you receive an article I sent you on niche markets and discussing the pain points?
Yeah.
So, well, tell me about niche markets and how you're relating to that for a moment.
Well, that's one that we have some questions on. Russ came up with this great tool for kind of thinking through that, by the way. It's really good. So we keep on coming up with new ones or different ones, but I guess it's narrowed, but in my mind anyway, like, I talked to a very successful team that I had met somewhere, and they said, okay, the two things they would recommend would be a program we have with credit unions or small banks where we go in and offer financial planning.
Okay.
And then we can give them, you know, a portion of the revenue.
Okay.
So not non-interest income. So
okay.
That's a new idea. So does that become one of our niches? That's a question. The other one is, kind of fits with what we've talked about before, and I think what probably should be a niche, and that's small businesses. But they pick larger businesses, and they become the expert. You know, this is a lot of what you said. So, you know, and that, I've heard this over and over again, some financial advisory team, you know, becomes the Exxon expert. And pretty soon, I mean, they are just growing like crazy because everybody is coming to them and they're known for that, you know, being an expert in that company. So we've listed some companies and, you know, thought through that a little bit. We even, you know, just made a kind of some inquiries because of this event we did. We met somebody in the HR department of NTT,
okay.
And I've got a client that works there. And first thing she said when we asked her about that,
we were trying to ask her advice.
Yeah. So yeah, we were trying to.
There you go. With your permission, I'd like to brainstorm.
Right.
Advice. There we go.
So she did that real quickly in a brief moment. She said, "Well, UBS has their foot in the door here, and they're very solid, and you know they're the expert, and they probably execute that pretty well. I mean, UBS mm-hmm. has their pros and cons. They're not for the, you know, probably 500,000 and below people, but they probably do a pretty good job with the larger employees.
Relationships. Yeah.
They told us that they were integrated through the company email somehow, so there was some sort of high-level partnership, apparently, from her perspective. She's like,
okay.
So saying all that, we are trying, but so that would be, you know, based on what this other team had said, you know, that could be our niche is, you know, pick five companies and just hit them real hard until we get in the door of several.
Yeah.
And they may be small. There may be 10, you know, 10 smaller right. companies that we're doing. So mm-hmm. I guess, you know, that must be really frustrating for you, I would think, you know, just pick something and go with it. But we keep on having this new input and, Russ, you should probably, I think you're a little more, you had picked like four or five.
So it comes down to it. I do know what the niches are, so that if somebody okay. I can be conversational and what I communicate is, business owners in construction.
Okay.
Communicate healthcare and legal professionals.
Okay, healthcare, legal.
And we have those people between the two of us in those two fields. We're not experts, but we do have bandwidth. I have a growing number of pharmacists, which are not what I would call a target, but the fact is I just keep getting more pharmacists.
Okay.
For 2 years.
Okay.
Healthcare is generic, but still
true. Right. Yeah, so now healthcare, you got to drill down specific, legal, broad, got to drill down specific, construction, you know, big picture, but got to drill down. I mean, you know, there's house builders, there's, you know, engineering and construction, there's, you know, pavers, there's all kinds of subsets of this market. And so you have to drill down. What are the trade journals?
So still not deep enough, okay.
No, it's still pretty broad. You've got to drill down. And I would say in that article that I sent you, there's trade journals in a number of areas. Okay.
Right.
And I've told you guys this before. In our industry, which I have to be very confident and an expert in, I have to read the trade journals, Financial Planning Magazine, RIA Biz, Advisor Perspectives, Trust Advisor, Investment News, Advisor Hub. Those are the trade journals. They allow me to understand what's going on in your business. Now, when you look at healthcare, you know, is there something from the American Medical Association that you ought to be looking at? Is there a journal in the American Bar Association and nuances that you ought to be looking at? You know, that you say, hey, look, I just saw this this article in ABA magazine or the Texas, you know, Law Journal that is speaking to the need for, you know, lawyers to take an active role in helping to shape, you know, the overall legal defense of clients who may not realize that they have liability, whatever. And we work with a number of clients that may have a need for that type of advice, Mr. Jones, and I'm wondering if you'd spend 15, 20 minutes so we can talk about what we do and get a better understanding of what you do. It's, you've got to be hitting 2 to 3 of those kinds of conversations per week. Okay? And that's really, it's the consistency of doing that, becoming an expert in the field, interviewing the folks in your niche to really find out what their pain points are. If you walk away, like I said in the article, and you don't feel like you had that emotional connection, that bridge when you walked away, then you didn't really do your job. Okay? So, all it was a conversation. You didn't get the emotional connectivity. So you gotta find out what's on their minds. Okay. Because what we're talking about here now is you're comfortable, very comfortable, working with a level of client. Okay? But now we've got to step it up. We've got to start moving to where the folks that you're talking to have $1 million or more in assets. If you win,
I got
you win.
All right. Got a question.
Yeah, by the way.
Do we really want to do that? I realize in the Supernova model, I mean, you've got bandwidth for 80 to 100, and they need to be fairly large. But some of these clients are just so hard to deal with, you know, medical, wealthy people. I mean, everybody's going after them. You know, a lot of our best clients, or I would say maybe best, are, you know, ones that have decent assets, but they see our value.
Right.
You know, we're not CPAs. We're not estate planning specialists. Should we become something like that? I think that's the kind of advisors or specialists that add a lot of value to, you know, the medical people, the higher income people are, you know, if you're a CPA as well, or if you're an estate planning specialist and you really, really know, you know, how to use insurance and things like that. I'm not sure that.
Okay. That's an excellent question.
Higher-end clients are, I mean, we have some, I've got several 5 million clients, but they're really down to earth. And I feel like, you know, I add value there. I give them personal attention.
And they give you business? And they give you good business, probably.
Oh, yeah. They're really good clients. But, my goodness, they've got people coming after them all the time.
Right. So, don't, you know, the one thing is don't shy away from adding some zeros to the clients that you go after. You know, one of the things I've observed is the person that's got 250, you hear from them all the time. The people that have got 1 million or 2 million, you don't hear from them, so you have to have them scheduled. And I found them to be very, very good people to work. Look, there's bad apples that have 100 grand, and there's bad apples that have 5 million. So you have to pick and choose your relationships and who you feel comfortable working with. And so that you have a book of business that are people that you just enjoy the engagement, you enjoy working with, you enjoy the COIs, they deliver, you enjoy the people in your mastermind group, it's a program of attraction, you look forward to meeting with them. Do you have the book I wrote, Supernova Advisor Team?
Yes.
There's a chapter in that book, and it's chapter 7, and I have a figure in there called the collaborative team process, okay? And in the collaborative team process, you have to look at the value that you provide, and then the experts. They can be internal, and they can be external.
Sure.
So let's think about, you know, do you have an insurance specialist in your office, in your district or region? Do you have an estate planning specialist?
Really good capabilities.
Okay. Then you've got to give them thinking that you want to work with them? And what's it going to take for them to spend that time with you cultivating that business? Start interviewing them. Yeah.
We have through RiverSource, we have an estate planning attorney. We have our advanced planning team, which is, you know, mainly a bunch of attorneys, maybe one.
Okay.
We've got insurance specialists who are glad to work with us. So we use them a lot.
We do.
We are bringing them in when it's appropriate. They are willing.
So if the Curtis is playing on a 250 client, we can't really make use of those guys.
Right.
On a 2.5 million or 5 million, a lot more strategies than you talked about.
Their needs are more complex. There's more that you can do for them. They've got interest rate needs. They've got long-term care needs. They've got portfolio management needs. They've got estate planning issues. There's just so much more, so that every time there's a conversation, there's the force multiplier in terms of resources and in terms of needs. That's where I think you all will continue to grow and get better at. But we've got to move beyond. We've got to get some of this stuff done. We can't, you know, if I came back to you a year from now and said, you know, hey, we're still trying to define our niche markets. I mean, we got to be done with that.
We're supposed to double our business in 18 to 24 months. So, yeah, we've got to get on the ball at this point.
Yeah. I'm feeling that there are some gaps that you're struggling with structure. You have some failure points in execution, and I think that we've got to stay all over that. So if it's time and you've got people taking up your time that aren't generating business, then that's not doing you any good thinking that one day they may be a big client. You know, go out and get the big clients today. Okay. So I think...
One more touched up on the time thing. When Rodney and I were talking maybe 2 weeks ago, a perspective he had is that he doesn't have any more time. And from his perspective, it's because of all the COI outreach that we've been doing, which, of course, happens
a lot.
And my perspective was it's all the moving parts.
Right.
My time, or, you know, all the contact and the – it's just way more volume of data points for me.
Okay.
So we both feel pushed on our bandwidth, but we have it from different reasons. And so is it one of those things where we should think about me doing more of the COI stuff and like just one of us do that instead of both of us?
Okay. So here's what I
would do.
Yeah. Here's what I would say is, you know, don't focus on 10 COIs. Show me that you got 2 in your back pocket. Okay. Now, once you got the 2 in your back pocket, it shouldn't be, you know, we're trying to get COIs. It should be done. You know, now you're working with them. You're talking to them on a monthly basis. When you feel like you got that done, organized, and you're ready to add one more. Okay? But each of you ought to have, you ought to have 3 for a total of 6. Centers of influence that are providing referrals.
We've even had COIs, like one happened this morning, offered the 90-day free look as a way to understand what we do, and they actually told us no.
Okay.
And I'm like, what on earth? I guess that's supposed to tell us we need to move on in a courteous way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we need to move on.
You know, maybe we're not explaining it well, but I mean, I think with, I don't know who you're talking about. I'm
Patterson.
Oh, yeah. Did she say no? Did you talk to her?
And again, there are spouses involved. Sometimes, you know, they take it home and say, hey, I think we should go through this process. And they're like, I'm not doing that. They're just trying to get your money. Or you know how it goes like that.
Right.
We asked her to, you know, here's how you can understand our process better so you can communicate it better. But again, I mean, she's starting a new business. She's got, I think, other financial advisors who are giving her business. And I feel like she's already connected to them, kind of what I'm getting the feeling.
Then you move on. You give them the offer. You explain it to the best of your ability. And not everybody's going to say, hey, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. So you move on and you get somebody that welcomes the opportunity to work with you. Because
right.
Your value proposition is unique. How you treat clients and service them and deliver the experience is unique. And so continue to move toward clients that you would enjoy working with. Absolutely.
Okay.
So I just, have we discussed kind of the struggle points, let's call them, where, you know, we didn't get, you know, we didn't convert, we didn't get the opportunities that we thought we would. And I would say some of it is kind of lack of implementation. Some of it is still struggling with and feeling comfortable with some of the concepts. And then some has to do with, you know, time management. You know, what it's going to take for you all to go from 300,000 to 400,000 to 750 to $1 million apiece to be a $2 million team is going to have to change. You can't do the same thing and get there. Okay.
Right.
So,
sorry to interrupt.
We
still need to be setting aside like time, you know, where we are getting together. We have a couple of meetings on the calendar, but a lot of times those don't happen for whatever reason.
Okay.
So we just need to do better at that. Execution, yes. There's been a lot of activity. Talking to people, you know, Russ found a board training class, you know, that, you know, we went to and, you know, made some good contacts with nonprofits. And we actually got invited to consider board membership in a nonprofit. So not sure it's a good one or not, you know. So that'd be one thing I would like to ask you before we get off the phone is, okay.
Yeah.
This came through one of my clients who's a CPA, and she's actually referred or connected me with probably three people over the last 2 years. One came to our event and looks like they did confirm. And then these people,
what have you done for her?
I have to be careful of, you know, how I handle that, we do have an opportunity to be considered for that board, and they honestly asked both of us. I don't know that we both need to consider it.
Nah, work on leverage, get one.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good. You've got a client and COI who brought somebody to an event that is a legitimate business candidate. This other introduction was really more of a connection where they thought it could help them. And so that's pretty meaningful production.
Yeah, absolutely.
That could be a very core personality in our practice right there, that person and how they see it.
See, so, I think you guys get it. You guys get it. Okay? And it's really, it's structure, implementation, and execution at this point. But you guys get it. You know what a COI is, and when that person refers three people to you, you know, you've got to continue to cultivate that relationship. If they can give you three, is the thank you note going out? Are you meeting the COI, you know, for dinner? And further deepening the relationship.
Right. So,
you know, because that could be a person that could get you 10 people.
What could?
That's COI.
Oh, yeah.
If you have three people that can do that, you know, you can add 15 new households. That's the difference between doing 3 to $375,400,000.
Sure. Good households, yeah.
I would like to also, you know, we don't necessarily know what makes some of this stuff work, but on this one, a year ago, or part of a year ago, we went out of our way. Rodney and I went to a different community 3 or 4 hours away, and we visited with this person. We do not know if something like that made us seem more substantial in her eyes. And to this now, we don't know if or not. It might have happened anyway. But, I mean,
with your permission, I would like to brainstorm. I need your advice.
Right.
You know, and start having the conversation. Okay, so I think you guys, you know, you're thinking the right way. You've got to get used to some of these concepts and continue to execute on them. Good. That's been really, really good feedback. Okay. What do you guys think you want to do going forward? You know, I'd love to continue to work with you to get you to focus more on execution, you know, less on teaching concepts, but getting you to implement concepts. Tell you one of the things I just, you know, finished doing with a team that is focused in the pension area. They're down in Texas. We've gone through the process, and we're going to spend 4 sessions, you know, ironing out the team business plan. We've got to get back to getting them to have the separation of duties and responsibilities so they're getting leverage. Time management and freeing up more client and prospect face time was an issue. The team dynamics, improving team performance, team collaboration. The marketing and business development, still a work in progress. Strengthening some of the Supernova concepts, delegation of duties and responsibilities, and execution. And then finally, this is a team that is focused on corporate wellness solutions, and they want to strengthen their offering of philanthropic services. So that's very specific of what they wanted to focus on. And I think with your team, you know, I've got a file full of notes that leads me to believe what you all need to focus on, much of which you communicated. So just kind of tell me what your thinking is, you know, going forward, going into next year. What do you think?
Well, I think I've said this a couple of times. This is Rodney. For it to make sense for us to move forward, we've got to identify clear gaps based on where we are. I mean, we're scrambling to keep our payout rate. We're scrambling to pay the bills and stuff like that. So we don't have I know I don't have huge margin. You know, I've got to, I can't get rid of another 20 clients or 30 clients so I can go focus on what I need to. I don't think I can. Maybe I can. But, man, I'm right on the edge of payout dropping to 32% or something like that. I think they changed it maybe like 34%. And that's ridiculous. So, anyway.
So you need to be at about, you need to be at over 400,000 to next year to keep that from happening. And so we got to break that goal down. Okay. Here's what I think I want to, go ahead. Let me hear from Russ too, first, before I kind of make a comment on that.
Yeah. I mean, you know us, you know our struggles and our resources and kind of where we are. We're probably a smaller team than you normally work with, so we have some unique things going on. But I guess I would like to hear very specifically how can you take us from where we are to that, you know, for me, 4,000, for Russ, maybe it's more. You know, very specifically, what is the plan? How long will it take, and how much is it going to cost?
Okay.
Yeah, we were going to talk about what we need to know.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
We know it's implementation, certainly, but, you know, we already know what to do if you think about it. We've been through this twice. We know what to do. We're not getting it done, or at least not effectively.
Yeah, here's my thinking is I want to give you all one more session that's scheduled just with us, and there's not going to be a cost for that. And during that session, what I'd like to do is I'm going to come up with a proposal of where I see the gaps and the specific things I think we need to do in order to turn it around. Okay? So, I have a checklist of sorts that I want to review. Now, once we look at that, then that would be kind of the focus of the communication. You guys can decide that you can have a call once per month, or bi-monthly, and you know, we'll go from there. But I'll put it in the form of a proposal. You know, I'll try to make it as cost effective as I possibly can, and then we go forward. You guys, you know, work out whatever arrangement that you want. But you got to first see if what I'm proposing makes some sense for you. And I'm going to go back through all the notes, and I'm going to write some of this stuff up. But to reiterate, if I'm missing anything, I want to be really clear on the things that we talked about today that we have both discovered as just some of the areas that need to be, you know, fine-tuned that are gaps, that if they're clarified, can make all the difference in the world in terms of your growth. One of the things I also want to say is let's think about attitude for a moment, okay? I want to know how you're feeling in terms of your attitude. And I know we've been on the phone for about an hour, so we've got to get ready to move on. But I remember being this young financial advisor, broker in San Francisco, and, you know, it was a big deal when I got somebody to, you know, give me an order for 100, 200, 300 shares of stock, okay? And I started to be elated and really enjoy that. And then I kind of went through this discovery process that I was really missing the big picture. And so I started to ask for larger sums of money, not feeling very comfortable with it because from my frame of reference in my life, that wasn't the exposure that I had. So then, you know, I started getting to the point where, you know, I started asking people for $1 million or more. And the assets grew to $80 million in 5 years. And so attitude is just a tad bit part of it. Thinking that not only that you guys are really nice guys, when you wake up in the morning, you try to do good. But are you going out and, you know, dealing with the affluent people? And there are plenty of them in Texas that can pay for your services. So do you want to bill yourself at, you know, $100 an hour, $200 an hour? $500 an hour. You know, what is the your time worth when you get in front of somebody with your expertise, your training, your licensing? What's that worth? And then you got to get paid accordingly. You have to deal with the right client that can afford you. Okay. So, in other words, there is a Walmart level, there's a Nordstrom level, there's a Neiman Marcus level, you know, thinking about, you know, being the good guys you are, you know, who now can begin to afford your services and your capabilities. Okay, so that's just a minor, well, not a minor, but it's an attitudinal thing and a shift that you have to think about. Okay? How does that resonate with you?
Hey, Curtis, so I definitely, this is Russ. I think you're right, and I recognize you're right. So if we can't use the same model for the Walmart customer as we do for the Neiman Marcus customer, that's completely recognized.
Okay. And I'm not saying that you're getting so giddy or anything about who you work with. It's just who can afford you and the value that you provide.
Yeah, so our speaker part says, hey, listen, we might have one, we might have two clients that are Neiman Marcus clients that can pay us or that we view that way. You know, it's one thing to replicate a book when you've got 50 of them. It's another when you've got one or two.
Right.
So I think that's probably our resistance point. Like, we just don't have those people.
Yeah. And I think you guys are going to be in the business for maybe the next 15 or 20 years, if I'm correct. So you do have time. You can get there. But we'll work on some of the changes. Now, do you all feel that I have heard everything that you wanted to share with me today in terms of kind of the you know, I heard structure and, you know, I heard, you know, where some of the gaps are in the team huddles, the frequency of contact, you know, the client growth issues, that the production was down. You've accomplished a lot operationally. A lot of the foundation has been laid. Now it's about execution. continuing with these centers of influence, you know, working on your net household growth and your productivity per client relationship, really more clearly defining your niche markets. They're still broad, but we've got to look at what are the subsets within those markets that you're going to focus on. Is that pretty much everything?
You know, this thought came to mind. I don't know if it's a good thought, but I've been intending, we're hoping for Russ and I to spend a little time, you know, over the next few weeks of, you know, just kind of brainstorming and talking about how we can be better going forward and all that. And I was going to ask him, you know, where does he see me not pulling my weight or not doing things well? So.
Well, you know, I think when teams get together, you know, and they start making their plan for 2019, you've got to narrow your vision, your mission, you know, what's your team's elevator pitch? Is there a team photo out there, your team brochure? And what you both do is you talk about what are the four or five things we can do to really make a difference and improve our productivity. And, you know, who is best suited to execute on certain things and how the team gets leverage. Okay? How do we get 1 + 1 = 3? I think that you have succeeded somewhat in breaking down team silos, okay, but there's still more to do to get your functioning. Like, can you all finish each other's sentences yet? You know, you gotta get to a point where you're really a team and you've got a thought and you can almost finish each other's sentences. You become that close as a team. So, you know, I've got 16 modules that I'm going to recommend as part of the next coaching series. I'm going to recommend some things on the gaps that I saw and then see how it resonates with you and have a conversation. So I'm going to need some time to do it, but I would like you to start off January 2019 and in a 4-week time frame have the business plan and strategy put together for the team that gets looked at once a month. So when do you think I need some time to put this together. When do you think I can schedule some time and send you something, put it together, and talk about it? You think are we out for this year, or is there a time that we should try to speak either before the year is up or the first week in January?
Yeah, let's talk first week in January.
Okay.
Typically, blocked.
Okay, today is Thursday. What's the first Thursday in January? How's that look?
Do you want to try to have 3 more in that thing? Yeah, Thursday, that Wednesday, whatever you want.
You want to see what this is?
It's a climate planner.
Here?
I've got the National Planning Review.
Okay.
So, with your time zone, looks like if we did it Thursday the 3rd.
Okay.
Be around noon or okay. later.
Noon or later. Noon or later, my time?
I'm sorry, our yeah. time. So 10 or later, okay. your time.
Okay. I'm flexible. I'm good. So, you want to do something at 10?
That's a real appointment, so just to work at
5. I can do 10, 10:30, 11.
How about 11?
Okay. Okay, 11 a.m. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of write kind of a summary of some thoughts and where I think this team needs to go, you know, summarizing the comments that you made today and put together the kind of a pricing scenario that might make some sense.
Okay.
And I'll get that to you, and we will just talk in general. You'll have an opportunity to, you know, more thought between now and the end of the year. And, you know, we've got to get you guys kicked off because at the end of January, 1/12 of the year is gone. So you only have 256 production days in a year.
Right.
So I'm kind of mindful of what you're working with. Well, look, this has been a very interesting conversation, and I feel like you guys really opened up and shared some really good thoughts with me, so I appreciate that. And the good news is when you're working with somebody like me, you can tell me anything, and you don't have to worry about it going back to anybody else. So... So that's the good thing about, you know, having the coach.
Sure.
And the coach tells you kind of sometimes some of the things you don't want to hear, but kind of reinforces the things that you kind of intuitively already know. Okay?
Right.
Okay. So I've got you down for Thursday, the 3rd of January, and, you know, we'll have kind of this final session and then cover the proposal. So any thoughts that you have, be prepared to share them.
Okay.
All right.
I was curious, do you have any thoughts that I realize your time is limited as well, but the how to vet a board seat opportunity? I mean, I think of some of those, but...
Sure. You know, look, what happens is nonprofits, and, you know, I actually run one right now. I'm the board chair for a nonprofit, and I've probably served on at least 10 or 12 boards, from symphony boards, hospital boards, community college boards, so on and so forth. And this is what boards want. They want your time. They want your money. They want your influence. Okay? So, I have advised boards on topics of HR, the executive director compensation. In fact, right now, I'm actually coaching an executive director who has to interface with the board and the challenges that she has, you know, with her staff and as well as the, you know, what the board's expectations are. So I think if you were to take some notes, I would write this down. Find out, look at the, Form 990 for that board. It's going to be online. Okay? So get a copy of that and review it. It's going to tell you how they spend their money. It's going to maybe even reveal some gaps. you got to figure out where you fit. Many of these boards, like I say, time serving on a committee. If you serve on the investment committee, you cannot translate that money back to you because it's a conflict of interest. And most firms won't allow it. You're also going to have to fill out an outside interest questionnaire, which your firm is going to require if FINRA requires it. Okay? Then they may want you to help with one major fundraiser every year. So don't necessarily feel that because you're in the financial world that you need to be on the finance committee, because right, that would block you from getting any money. Once you get on the board, we want to talk about how you cultivate those relationships, where you say something simply like, hey, look, Jack, we don't know each other, but I want to take the time to get to know you. I want to find out what you do. I want to explain what I do. And then relationships are forged. Centers of influence are forged. So it's giving, and then there's some getting if done the proper way. It can really benefit you in your practice. The area of philanthropic services, if you look at that article I sent you, there's a website you can go on and begin to get familiar with the nonprofit arena. So you're going to find out about annual giving campaigns. They're going to want each board member to put up a little bit of money. When I was on the board of the Y, there was a $5,000 annual board commitment.
Okay.
And some boards, it's like $500 or whatever you think you can give. So how's that kind of sound so far?
Sounds great. Yeah, thank you for the specifics. And we have their 990, and but you know, as far as the other board members, they're a public place where we can find that?
No. If you're being courted, then, you know, you want to get a profile. Look, I'd like, with your permission, I'd like to, you know, brainstorm with you. You know, give me a profile of some of your existing board members, or if you have written profiles, can I get a copy?
Okay.
And, you know, understand what your expertise is. Is it fundraising? Is it, you know, being a center of influence? You know, look, you all just did a client event. You know, look, the Y board did a luncheon and auction. And they had a senator come and speak from California, and on the importance of, you know, kind of family and kids. What is the board that you are considering? What do they do?
It's called Artist Outreach, and okay, it's a educational program in the schools. A lot of times, Title I schools, or it doesn't necessarily need to be. They operate within the school at TCU University, which is,
okay,
I would consider one of the best. But anyway, it's using music and cooking to educate,
okay,
and their results have been pretty good, and they're growing quickly.
Okay.
So seems like
and
a
lot
of...
Is that a mission that is consistent with your values?
I would say yes. The only thing, I tend to be most interested in faith-based, and I don't know that they're faith-based.
Okay. Well, but you know, you are in Texas, and I'm sure a lot of the constituency, that's part of their general value system. So, you know, you want to be associated with organizations that have consistent values. And these values are, you know, look, we want to help the community. We want to help our kids succeed. And
sure.
So I think that's a worthy mission. But yeah, interview them as much as they're going to interview you. Find out as much as you can. You know, get a good profile. You know, you're doing your homework already. And now go find out what the makeup of that board is. You know, what are the gaps? What are you trying to accomplish? You know, what keeps this board up at night? What do you think about? Okay?
Right.
And, look, I went to a Y luncheon, and you name it, they bought a table. The big accounting firm with a few partners had a table. A couple of real estate companies had a table. And it was a luncheon to really celebrate the organization and continue to fund it. I went to one called San Francisco Achievers. It was a dinner and an auction. A couple of speakers, the kids stood up and gave personal testimonials on what it meant to have money to go to college and what they're studying and some who are graduating, where they're going to, you know, do after graduation. They raised $500,000 that night.
Yeah.
And, but the biggest thing were the people who were in the audience, you know, and at the reception who you got to exchange business cards with and press the flesh with. That's where you're going to benefit being on some of these boards.
Yeah. I can see now on the website some of their board members, and two of the current 10 are like securities or investments.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay, so they're bringing in another guy. They've got a couple of on there. But what some of these folks don't do well is they don't take the time and say, hey, Joe, I'd like to go to lunch. I'd like to find out what you do and further my relationship. So, you know, make sure you do that.
Okay.
And I think we'll do well. Well, look, guys, I hope that all helps. You've given me my assignment, and, you know, I want you to think positively about what you have been able to accomplish. You haven't hit all the goals that you wanted to, but you're making progress, and let's have a successful 2019, and you all enjoy your holiday.
All right. Thank you very much, and you as well.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.